From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Good man, you managed it. Simon, thank you. Welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show. How you getting on? You all right? Monday blues, no? You're in good form? You better be. The BBG, not the BBC. Welcome to your Richie Allen Radio Show, Monday, October 19th.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Ah, sure, if you didn't do it for God, who would you do it for, eh? Right, the wonderful Jean-Anne Crowley, actress. Well, I could be here all day giving you the old resume. Brilliant actress, stage and screen, journalist, playwright. It's been, I can't believe it, 3 years since my great friend Jean-Anne was on this programme. I can't wait to chat with her. She's been following the furore over the Netflix documentary Cuties. And that furore shows no sign of going anywhere because a court in Texas, or a grand jury in Texas, has indicted Netflix over the documentary. Now, Jean-Anne has followed this. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Netflix. We'll talk about how she's observed the COVID measures in Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, and much more with my great friend Jean-Anne Crowley in hour two. Before that, Catherine Blakelock is a British hotelier. You know her well. She was the founder and the first leader of the Brexit Party. Now, Catherine joins me to talk about what happened in France last week, where the teacher Samuel Paty was murdered, basically murdered, because he showed controversial cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad to his pupils. Still under investigation in France. Catherine will talk about that and the economic impact of the COVID measures as well. She'll be with me this hour. It's your Richie Allen Show. It is, and it's Monday. I know I said it's Monday already. And you can join in through the usual way. There's only one way. It's Twitter. So you heard Wales. Has Wales been talking? You heard about Wales then. From Friday, Wales will be under a fire break lockdown. Yes, not a circuit breaker, a fire break. They're coming up with wonderfully exotic ways of describing a national lockdown. Well, in Wales anyway. A full lockdown from Friday. It'll be a short, sharp shock, according to Welsh First Minister Mark Drakeford. It will last until Monday, November 9th. Okay, that straddles Halloween. Any hope for us in Wales? Any chance for us in Wales that we'll have a bit of Halloween? No.
The rules, the law, as it will apply...
The rules and the law. I love this shit, I really
in
do.
In Wales, will not allow for bonfire gatherings or for gatherings for Halloween.
No trick-or-treat, no bonfires in Wales. You deserve it. It's your own fault. You deserve it because you didn't obey the measures. You're not social distancing. You're not washing your hands. You're not covering your faces. So no feckin' Halloween now for you in Wales. It's your own fault. No bonfires either, says Mark Drakeford. This is the world we inhabit now. No bonfires, no Halloween. No trick-or-treat for the little Welsh kids.
In this extraordinary period... We all have to...
Sacrifice the things we like doing, like trick-or-treating.
Do everything we can, because every little action that we take to work together will make a difference.
Yeah.
And I think it will be self-policing, because people will recognise this, and it will be very obvious if people try to break the law.
It'll be obvious if people try to break the law. Well, it obviously... If you see somebody putting a big bonfire together, that's not something you can conceal easily, is it? What's Taffy doing over there? Looks like he's putting a bonfire together. Call the old Bill.
There will be an exception for Remembrance Sunday.
Ah, Christ, yeah. We got to have that pageantry, don't we? Where we tell all sorts of lies about the First and Second World War and who started those wars and why. Yes.
Those organised events that local authorities with the British Legion and other partners have already organised for the Sunday, the 8th of November, where we mark that national sacrifice, it seems to me more important than ever that we do that at a period where further sacrifices.
Imagine the irony of that. It's so important that we honour the sacrifice for people who fought for our freedoms. Yes, yes, they did fight for our freedoms. When they took on the lunatic in Germany, when they took him on over the south coast in airplanes that could barely, that were barely fitting together, when they fought Hitler and the Nazis in Belgium and in France, yes, what were they fighting for? A future world where you'll be told you can't go to the pub after 10 o'clock, where you'll be told you must stay indoors. The irony is so thick, you could choke on it, eh? That was Mark Drakeford. And by, of course, who really started those wars. We all know who backed Hitler, don't we? Said it 1,000 times on this programme. Eh? The petrochemical and massive pharmaceutical companies that backed the Nazis to the hilt, hoping that Hitler would win so that they could control a united Europe governed by the Nazis. Right? You know your history, right? Your real history, right? Okay. Ironically, the Welsh First Minister, let's not have Halloween, no bonfires, none of that, but we'll keep Remembrance Sunday open. We'll do that so that we can remember people who fought for our freedoms while I'm taking them away. Yeah. What about Neil Hamilton? Now, he's currently the interim leader of UKIP. Currently. Neil Hamilton, he's been on this programme a few times over the years. Neil is also a member of the Welsh Parliament or Senedd. He was on Ian Collins' talk radio show today. This is what he said about the announcement by Drakeford that Wales will be locked down from Friday.
Well, of course, it's not a fire break. It'll just delay the transmission of the virus by a bit. Obviously, if people aren't in contact with other people, then it's more difficult for a virus to spread. But as soon as you lift the restrictions, then the infection rates will start to rise again. And this is so patently obvious. Then, unless we're going to commit ourselves to permanent lockdown forevermore until either we're all dead or a virus is invented, then what's going to happen is that Britain will remain as a kind of open prison or series of gulags around the country with borders that we can't lawfully cross. And the economy is going to crash and millions of people are going to suffer, not just economically, but also in terms of their mental health and physical well-being as well. We know that there are masses and masses of other serious diseases and conditions which have gone untreated and undiagnosed as a result of the emphasis which the NHS has put on COVID. This is a zero-sum game. I mean, there is a real price, a real cost to the kind of policies which are being imposed upon us by governments that want to control us and everything around us.
What do you suppose is behind this, then? I mean, Mark Drakeford's not a stupid person. Who's he listening to?
Yeah.
Maybe he is,
well,
by the way.
It's the same kind of people who are advising David Cameron, you know, the so-called experts, but they're actually just professors of guesswork because they've no idea what the infection rates are amongst the population. The R rate is a meaningless statistic because we don't know what proportion of the population has a latent immunity. We don't even know how many people have already had the virus without even knowing it and are now immune. So I'm afraid that these draconian lockdowns are just like a giant pair of asbestos underpants to protect the backside of politicians.
Yeah.
Fantastic. A giant pair of asbestos underpants, said Neil Hamilton. And in Belgium, all bars and restaurants have been closed. Jesus, eh? The Belgians love a pint. They love a box of chocolates as well. Although, let's be honest about it, their chocolates are highly overrated. I've been there. I've had their chocolate. Nowhere near as good as a Curly Whirly or a Chomp or a packet of Cadbury's buttons. Getting mad now. You know what's happening in Manchester? There is seemingly a standoff underway between the mayor of Greater Manchester and some regional mayors in the northwest with the government over the imposition of Tier 3 lockdown on the area. Right? The government wants to put Manchester into Tier 3, which would mean closing pubs, bookmakers, gyms, casinos, right? Andy Burnham is saying, well, we don't want to be put in Tier 3. We'd rather a national lockdown. But if you do want to put us in Tier 3, give us enough money so that we can keep people furloughed. This is insanity, of course, and I've explained why a million times. Now, Simon McCoy presents for the BBC in the afternoons, BBC News 24. McCoy had Chris Fletcher on. Who is he? BBG, I hear you scream at your radio. Chris Fletcher is the Communications Director for Manchester, Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce. And he was asked by Simon McCoy, was the Chamber of Commerce man, how bad is it looking for businesses in the Northwest? The answer, pretty stark.
It's hard to put a number on it, but we you know, when we do our research and our surveys, you know, we've got about 40% of the businesses coming back saying they've got about 3 months' worth of cash left. And obviously, if you're denying them customers, that's going to take a big hit. But it's not just in the here and now. If your cash reserves are being whittled away, which they have been over the last 6 months, you've got a whole stack of businesses then that can't invest in the future, are not able to recruit people, and the whole economy begins to grind to a halt. And it's that damage, really, that people are so desperate to avoid.
And Chris, we're talking about supply chains affected as well.
Obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back 6 months, 7 months, when the pubs and hospitality sector were first closed, immediately following that, we had a slew of phone calls into the office from our members that were involved in that trade. For example, supplying linen to restaurants, all of a sudden their customers completely disappeared. Now, it's one thing to say that if you're forced to close, there's help there for you. But if you're involved in the supply chain, you know, the government could quite easily turn around and say, well, we've not told you to close, therefore you're not eligible for any help. So this really is a very complex issue. And having been through lockdown once, what we want to make sure is that this time, if we go into tier three and if those closures happen, then they're done in a way that doesn't do long-lasting damage to the economy in Greater Manchester, not just for businesses, but for the people that work in the businesses and also for the wider community as well.
Yeah, and all that money must be paid back. All the furlough money, of course. Chris Fletcher, Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce. Yeah. Now, Sky News ran a story on this standoff between the government and Andy Burnham and the other mayors. Now, you might remember Andy Burnham, the mayor of Greater Manchester from Lee, I believe. You might remember him saying that Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, was exaggerating the nature of the hospitalizations or the imminent number of people needing to be hospitalized. Johnson was exaggerating that, said Andy Burnham. The picture in our hospitals isn't as bad as the government said Andy Burnham over the weekend. Now today, Sky News is reporting on Greater Manchester's hospitals, and it said that Sky, the two of those hospitals were operating at 100% occupancy. Others were hovering around 85%. And one of the hospitals they claimed is operating at 100% occupancy is Salford Royal, which is a stone's throw from Richie Allen Show Towers. Now, a number of you are clever enough to have noticed that there are a certain amount of beds allocated for COVID patients in hospitals, in NHS hospitals. That's a very good point. So it might be a dozen, might be 10, might be 15. Very good point. But Sky News and the BBC isn't distinguishing that. It isn't making a distinction between beds for people with non-COVID related health issues and beds for people with coronavirus. Right, okay. So Sky was, and I don't blame Sky here. I put a tweet about this on, I don't know, about an hour ago, 2 hours ago. And some of you are screaming at Sky. Don't scream at Sky. They get the figures from the NHS. All they can do is either publish them or not. So I wouldn't be screaming at Sky News in this instance. So Sky says Salford is operating at 100% occupancy today. Now, I know three people personally who work at Salford Royal Hospital in different capacities. And I know the partner of another, but not very well. Now, two of the people I do know, two of them, as I was coming to air, one earlier on, one as I was coming to air, two of them said to me today that the hospital isn't nearly full at all. And one of them said to me, even back when things were allegedly really bad, back in March, April, the hospital wasn't anywhere near full either. Now, you've got to take that as hearsay. It isn't proof. I'm not telling you that I know for a fact that Salford isn't full. I can't. This is hearsay. I know the people and I don't imagine they would be telling me lies, but it isn't definitive proof. That's what you would call hearsay. You've got to take it or leave it. But they've said we're not under any pressure. And I heard from a number of people back in the spring that they weren't under a lot of pressure there either. And we know the so-called Nightingale Hospitals, which were hospitals developed out of sporting arenas and other buildings that weren't being used, none of those ever really saw a patient. So you take that with a pinch of salt or you run with it, it's entirely up to you. Also, big story today, BBC ran with it, so did the Telegraph and others. More men than normal are dying at home from heart disease in England and Wales, and more women are dying from dementia and Alzheimer's. The Office for National Statistics have produced these figures. And in contrast, deaths in hospitals from these causes have been lower than usual. The ONS, the Office for National Statistics, finding that the so-called epidemic, and it's interesting to use epidemic, not pandemic, they say the epidemic may have led to fewer people being treated in hospital. No shit, Sherlock. We know that. Again, the government and Matt Nocock, as we have come to call him in this household, Matt Nocock, have seemed to have been prioritising people dealing with coronavirus or people suffering from it over people suffering with potentially terminal illnesses as well. Seems to have been a trade-off made by the government. We'll prioritise the treatment of people with coronavirus over people who have life-threatening illnesses. And the Office for National Statistics are saying that today, although very little has been made of that story on television and radio news today. Now, the Richie Allen radio show has been around a few years. It has a very healthy listenership, and because of that, it does get fairly frequent mentions in the national press. Whoop-de-doo. Doesn't matter, does it? Nothing to be shouting from the rooftops about. I don't care. I never mention when the show gets a mention. I don't bring it up, and I'm bringing it up today. Because about 10 days ago, The Guardian sent an email to Martin Kulldorff, who is an epidemiologist from Harvard University, their school of medicine there. And I emailed him asking him to comment on the fact that he had been on The Richie Allen Show, which has had some undesirable people on it in the past. So this was 10 days ago, and at the time he emailed them back to say, basically, piss off. I didn't know of The Richie Allen Show. I agreed to go on it because I'm happy to talk to anybody who is providing a platform for those of us who opt for a different way of dealing with coronavirus. You see, that's what he said. And at the time I sent a tweet to The Guardian just saying, be very careful now about what you say about me personally. So they didn't say anything about me personally. Amazingly, 10 days later, they published the story. And this is it. One of the three co-authors of a letter that calls for lockdowns to be abandoned in favour of herd immunity has appeared on a radio broadcast that previously featured multiple Holocaust deniers and anti-Semites. Of course, that's bullshit. I haven't featured multiple Holocaust deniers, nor have I featured multiple anti-Semites. Kulldorff of Harvard Medical School appeared on the Richie Allen Show on the 6th of October to discuss the letter described as the Great Barrington Declaration. Kulldorff said he agreed to go on the programme because it was important to reach all segments of the population. The show was described as an online platform for anti-Semitic conspiracy theorists and Holocaust deniers by Hope Not Hate, an organisation that monitors extremist groups. Hope Not Hate is not an organisation that monitors extremist groups. It's an organisation that exists to slander those who criticise the state of Israel. That's what it is. It doesn't monitor extremist groups. It's not there to prevent racism or anti-Semitism or anything like it. And my radio show, which has millions and millions of listeners, by the way, around the world, isn't a platform for anti-Semitic conspiracy theorists. It's a platform for everybody. Anyway, so when asked by The Guardian about his appearance on the show, Kulldorff said, it's critically important to reach all segments of the population. I appeared in The Spectator and The Jacobin. And regarding The Richie Allen Show, I had never heard of it before they invited me. Why would he have heard of it? He's an epidemiologist based at Harvard School of Medicine. We don't move in the same circles. And it's a big old world, right? The Guardian then goes on to say, there is no indication that Kulldorff shares any of the views expressed by other guests that have previously appeared on The Richie Allen Show. Well, why write the article then? It's a smear piece on Kulldorf primarily, and then on the radio show secondary, right? The Guardian says the programme has a troubling history. A troubling history. Back in 2016, Allen hosted the Holocaust on Air, Nick Collerstone. I did. I disagreed with him. Calling him an old friend. He is an old friend. I disagree with him. But I've interviewed him a few times over the years. Allen described his 7-7 conspiracy theory work as vital and essential. It is. It is. His book, Terror on the Tube, is one of the greatest reads I've ever had the pleasure to read. It destroys the 7th of July conspiracy theory, which is that Mohammed Sadiq Khan and his pals blew up a bus and two subways in London. It's bullshit. And he destroys it in his book. Right? Goes on to say that I've hosted Alison Chablow as well. And most recently, the channel has featured long-standing conspiracy theorists Dr. Vernon Coleman and Piers Corbyn. Troubling history, says The Guardian. So why am I talking about it if it doesn't matter? Well, of course it doesn't matter. And I don't matter. I'm not the story. What's interesting about this is ethics. Ethics are very important. Let me give you a little journalism 101. If you're going to broadcast something about somebody or write something about somebody, it is essentially the law that you, I don't mean the law as in statutory law, but in journalism, it is that one of the most important ethical understandings that you contact the person you are criticising and give them right to reply. Hey, we're going to do a piece tomorrow where we say that your programme is a platform for some wackos. Anything you'd like to comment? Well, I would actually like to comment, yeah. I've interviewed 3,000, maybe 4,000 people in a 12-15 year period. Longer, 20-year period. Of course, I've interviewed some people with some opinions that we mightn't agree with. But that's the whole point, isn't it? Of free speech, we allow people to say what it is they think is true, and then we challenge it. And of course, that's why The Guardian couldn't contact me. Because if they did contact me, I would have said that, and they would have had no choice but to print it. But it's a smear piece on Martin Kulldorf. It's playing the man and not playing the ball. It's an ad hominem attack, somehow trying to diminish the message of the great Barrington Declaration, diminish it by association. Oh, you shouldn't take him seriously. Why? Because he went on that show that sometimes interviews those conspiracy theorists. All right, then. Therefore, he must agree with those people that he never heard of. Right. That he never heard of. He never heard of the host. Shocking by The Guardian. And I lamented The Guardian going out of print. And I still do. Because I'm not so childish. I'm not so obtuse. I'm not so, you know, bad-spirited or mean-spirited. Because they've had a pop at me that I would wish them, you know, I would wish them harm. But the media landscape is changing. People are waking up to what the mainstream media does and how it does it. And I'm one of the reasons the media, the people are waking up, because I regularly break down the mainstream media and how it does what it does and explain it in monologues, sometimes very long-winded monologues. And more people are aware of it, and that's the reason they're not reading rags like The Guardian anymore, and it's gone out of print. Although I take no pleasure in that. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show for Monday, October 19th, 2020. I'll be speaking with Catherine Blakelock in a moment. Don't miss her, the founding member, well, the founder of the Brexit Party, businesswoman. Lot to talk about with Catherine. That'll be in about 3 minutes' time. And don't forget later on, as I mentioned earlier on, the great Jean-Anne Crowley returns to your Richie Allen Radio Show after a 3-year break.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide.
Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyursky.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
While I telephone Catherine Blakelock, let's have a little bit of Ray Charles for a few minutes. I had this lined up for Sunday View yesterday and it's still in the playoffs. Here it is, back in two.
I got a way to love me.
Ray Charles on the Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is exactly 5:30. Monday's programme. Welcome to it. Lovely to be chatting with you as usual. Keep the tweets coming in. Dozens and dozens of tweets. I'm delighted to welcome back to the programme. It's been ages, but we enjoy her company. Catherine Blakelock, of course, you know Catherine's a very successful British businesswoman and hotelier. She was the founder and the first leader of the Brexit Party. Catherine, thanks for taking time out of your busy day. Welcome back.
Hello.
Nice to have you on. I was listening with great interest a short time ago to Chris Fletcher from the Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce. And he said a startling thing, Catherine. He said that around about 40% of the businesses known to Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce have, if they're lucky, about 2 to 3 months worth of cash left. And after that, it's basically game over. Does that compute with you? Is that the sort of thing you're hearing?
I mean, I'm extremely lucky in that I'm in Norfolk, and Norfolk is one of the places that hasn't been shut down. And in fact, I've had guests who are coming from various other places because Norfolk is open and, you know, they're coming to places by the sea and holiday cottages. But, I mean, it is desperate. It really is. I know people who as well, I mean, literally were given a few hours notice of the job. People who were subcontractors. I have a builder who I know he'd worked for about 10 years for this company, and he was given 3 hours notice because he had to get off site. Otherwise, they wouldn't have got one of the government grants. So, you know, some people are getting grants, and obviously the public sector are fine. You know, they have the massive pensions, and they don't worry. So there's lots of people who don't worry and who are really happy with the situation. I mean, you see them going on holiday midweek. People who, work for, well, even doctors. I mean, doctors now are doing things by telephone, and they can be anywhere they like in the country and do their consulting. They just need a computer and a mobile. So there's sort of 50% of the population, the same 50% of the population that is either on benefits or works for the public sector. And then the other 50% of the population are in dire straits.
When you mentioned doctors there, let me go back to that, because I understood it that people were being encouraged to go back to see their GPs for regular visits and checkups, you know, things they were being encouraged not to do. Are they not?
They're not seeing. I mean, I've actually had an appointment. They're not seeing them. I mean, both for myself, when I actually had an appointment in Norfolk, and for a friend of mine, or other doctors I know in London, they're not seeing anybody. They're doing you basically get told your Thursday morning and you get a telephone call. I mean, this may be a new way of working because, you know, doctors are getting it done quicker. There's none of this sort of hanging around and waiting for people. You just get the next one on the mobile if they're not there.
I'd like to know the figures for the country, because I don't doubt that you've had that experience. And I'm actually seeing a tweet now from somebody who is saying the same thing, that doctors are not seeing patients. But I'd like official figures on that. My own surgery is only around the corner, just for the crack, as we say in Ireland. I might try to make an appointment and see what happens. You never know. Catherine Blakelock is our guest this hour. It's very important stuff, this. Catherine, the government says repeatedly through its scientific advisors and through the health secretary that cases are rising exponentially. We've got to have this new three-tier system. We've got to put measures in locally when necessary, because if we don't, the NHS is going to be overwhelmed and lots of people are going to die. That's what the government says repeatedly. What do you say?
Well, if you look at the first round, there were rising figures and rising deaths. If you look at this round, there are rising rise in cases and lowering deaths, no rise in deaths. So, I mean, I'm not an epidemiologist, but you would assume that at the end of the day, all of us will eventually get this thing. And the people who were very vulnerable, who died of three or more, you know, all the other factors, and we know what the average age, you know, I mean, you've got a 0.05% risk of dying from this thing under 75. So, you know, it has taken older people off, and they aren't there anymore. I mean, the people who had congenital heart disease and various things. But what we've got, I see, is two extreme views, and then the rest of the population is either coward or just socially compliant. So you have the Piers Corbyn view of the world, which is about as ridiculous as the 500,000 deaths view. I mean, I agree with Piers, and I did some demonstrating against lockdowns right at the beginning and with Jeff Wyatt, and I got a fixed penalty notice for my sins in Leicester. But, you know, there's a difference between campaigning against the extremity of the lockdown and saying it's a hoax and it doesn't exist at all. And, you know, I'm pretty certain, A, it does exist. But then you've got the others. And I really do feel, you know, that it's the left wing public sector. Never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah, I like Piers as
well.
Never
let a good crisis go to waste.
Well, we can talk about that. I like Piers as well. And Piers has been categorized by the mainstream media as being an eccentric character, but he's also an incredibly bright guy, a physicist and meteorologist.
I've had him for dinner. Exactly. I've had him for dinner at my house. I met him through this.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning. And, you know, and I was also a climatologist. He's a professional meteorologist, long range climate forecaster, and he's got a first in physics from Imperial College.
Yeah.
And he basically says, the whole climate change theory is the wrong way round. You know, the sun causes the increase in sun temperature causes an increase in carbon dioxide, not the other way. And I completely agree with him on that. And I agree with him about the totalitarian nature of the lockdowns. And I agree with him about the loss of liberties and the police, absolutely madness of the police brutality. I'll give you an example. Okay. A friend of mine took a train from Norwich to London yesterday. They only had 6 carriages rather than 10, and it was absolutely jam-packed. They were like sardines, and yet they're locking Cardiff down. I mean, and locking parts of London down.
It's insane.
So, you know, you've got... It's just nonsense. There's no logic. There's nothing logical about what's being done.
What is it about Piers? I don't have to defend him, by the way. I know that Piers doesn't believe the virus itself. Is that where you part company with him?
He doesn't believe it exists. Yeah, he doesn't. And I have a feeling that that's like saying measles doesn't exist. And then you get on to the next thing about the 5G. The 5G causing COVID, or, well, you know, so there's a sort of mixed message there. I mean, either COVID doesn't exist, but if it doesn't exist, how could 5G
cause it's
that sort of stuff, and saying that, you know, all the virologists in the world are wrong, and all the epidemiologists and all the people studying and all the people in the vaccine companies are completely wrong, and it's one great big conspiracy. I mean, I absolutely have no doubt about the issue that there's been fantastic, and it might not have been, but I don't believe that it was a total plandemic. I think that it started for whatever reason. The Chinese released it, and then a lot of governments. I mean, look what the left wing are doing in Melbourne in Australia. I mean, they are one of the you know, the very, very left
totalitarianism. I'll tell you what I won't do.
Lock down everybody.
I won't waste
power.
But that's right. I won't waste time arguing with you. When I say I won't waste time, because in fairness, yours is a point of view that, sadly, we haven't heard much of on the programme. I get a lot of people who'd be pretty sympathetic to Piers, and Piers will be back on. He'll be back on again in the future, and he can have his own say.
And I mean, I'm not unsympathetic.
Oh, no, you don't have to say that at all. Listen, I 100%.
It's just where it goes to. It's the sort of David Icke 5G fringe. I mean, the problem with 5G itself is that you can't find any evidence either way, really. I mean, I've looked at it.
You've looked at it.
You know, it's difficult to find evidence either way. I mean, you've got a few fringy doctors saying that it crosses, you know, cell cell boundaries and whatever. I don't know. You know,
I think there's
microwave ovens called cancer. I don't know.
On that, Catherine, on the 5G thing, there are, I've seen papers now endorsed by at least 300 fairly well-known academics from Ivy League universities who say that it's deadly and we should go nowhere near it. And I'd expect I wouldn't dream of patronising you, but as an obviously very smart woman who thinks for herself, I would expect you to want that to be safety tested before they ever switched it on, and they haven't done that. And there are scientists out there who say it's dangerous, and of course we don't hear of these scientists because of something we've discussed before. The media ignores the fact that there are men and women out there who say, listen, 5G could have catastrophic consequences for human health. But on the COVID thing, I agree with you. I've not seen any evidence that 5G is doing any of that, you know.
There are a number of things. I mean, there are a lot of people in the countryside in Britain still who have very, very bad internet and almost very, very bad Wi-Fi. And those people will love it. I mean, they will love it. I bet you that 90% of the population will take up 5G without a murmur because they'll love it. They'll love it. But there's plenty of things that are bad for us. I mean, alcohol, cigarettes, drugs. You know, air pollution and the rest of it. I mean, you know, half the additives are bad for us, but McDonald's is probably not very good for us. But I'm just saying that, you're not going to find that out for 30 years and we don't know how bad it is and all the rest of it. I mean, but the other issue about 5G, of course, is that governments want it, not just for the facial recognition, which would be the scary part, but all the the cars and the technology surrounding 5G.
Yeah,
I believe you can't have electric cars and driverless cars and so much other technology needs 5G.
You're absolutely bang on, and that's a dystopian future that we're all looking at. We'll agree to disagree on that. I wouldn't want it anywhere near me, not without a proper human impact study done. There isn't going to be one done. The body is actually the body supposed to regulate, say it from a non-ionizing radiation, is actually funded by the industry itself. That's a fact. I mean, it's scandalous. I'm worried about it. I believe it will be devastating. At least
I don't think you'll be able to avoid it.
You're absolutely bang on, Catherine.
Unless you want to sit up at top of a Welsh Irish mountain and never.
You're
100%
right. Listen, I'm in Salford, and you are right. There's no, seemingly there isn't any way to avoid it. They're planning on putting it, I think, a mile away from where we are. They want to put a big transmitter somewhere around Weest Lane in Salford. Listen, no doubt. And I want to say one other thing.
My biggest issue with it is the tracing. I mean, I refuse to put the track and trace on. I refuse. I just say I haven't got a mobile, or, you know, my mobile's out of battery. But the point is that, you know, I mean, there are really good reasons why. I know Jeff Wyatt, who's been campaigning with Piers, does not have a 3G or a 4G mobile. He doesn't have a smartphone. You go back to a 2G, and they can't trace you at all.
Hey, listen, I want to talk about France, because you're no stranger to controversy, Catherine Blakelock. That's why I like that's why I like speaking to you. You put a tweet out today. You get hammered when you tweet, which is ridiculous. I think people should debate and put cogent points rather than be abusive and be rude. But two points I wanted to make. Very good friend of mine listening in Ireland, Fiona Marie Flanagan, she's a good journalist. She says, Richie, I'm surprised that Catherine can't embrace the precautionary principle. The existing evidence against adverse biological impacts of VMFs are overwhelming. The precautionary principle, Catherine Blakelock. We should at least test the bejesus, as we would say in Ireland, test it properly before switching it on and affecting people's lives.
I haven't got any problem with that. I'm not arguing against that. I'm not. I'm just saying that there's not enough people who will campaign against it. Yeah. There are too many people. It's like, who's going to campaign against McDonald's? I mean, people like it. It's an opium for the people. You're absolutely right. They should test it. But the problem is, it's one of those things, and we're talking about 5G here, it's one of those things that it doesn't need a few hours. It's like additives. You need 10,000 doses of the stuff. This isn't going to kill you in 5 minutes. It's going to kill you in
a slow
maybe
killer,
the first
maybe.
Signs of it are going to come out in 10, 15, 20 years' time, yeah?
Maybe sooner. Just before we talk about France.
Well, it could be sooner.
It could
but
be
the
sooner.
The problem is most of these low-level type of problems, you know, we can look at thousands of additives as well. Those type of low-level things take a decade to produce a result.
They do.
To start producing the cancers, etc.
But one of the things you mentioned a few minutes ago is that I got to do this in the interest of fairness. You mentioned David Icke.
Yeah.
Now, I've got to say this about David Icke.
Yeah.
I don't believe that the Queen is a lizard. I'm pretty sure she isn't. But, but I've known David for years. He's a lovely bloke. And David Icke would say, if he was here now, he would say, I'll tell you what, Catherine, fair enough, he's got thick skin anyway. But he would say, I've been warning people for years that the sorts of things being introduced by our governments now, like mandatory vaccines in the future, all that sort of stuff, I've been warning people that this was coming down the line. So don't be so quick to dismiss me as the guy who said
the Queen is a lizard. I'm not dismissing him either. But the fundamental problem is, you know, that he has a headline name. You know, if I say to you Barrymore,
I'm going to think swimming pool.
Yep,
absolutely.
Okay, I'm sure he's got lots of, he could have written 17 books and have been the most, well, we know he was a wonderful talk show host, but you think swimming pool problem. Now, that could have all been nothing to do with him. And that is the issue. It's like me, you know, it's the same thing. We're in this world where you never get, you're a single dimensional character. You never get, the fact, you know, I'm some sort of terror. I've said it and I don't like talking about it, but I'm some sort of, you know, according to The Guardian, I'm a racist. And yet I live in a family with three races.
Yeah, with three races. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't matter. The truth doesn't matter.
And my argument would be I live in a multiracial family, but I don't live in a multicultural one. And there's a big difference.
Catherine Blakelock is our guest. Catherine's going to stay with me till the top of the hour. We've got 10, 15 more minutes with Catherine. Thanks for coming on again today. I appreciate it. I wouldn't worry too much about The Guardian either, to be honest. Catherine, what happened in France last week was horrendous, wasn't it? Let's very briefly remind people. A teacher called Samuel Paty was murdered by a man. He was beheaded. It couldn't be any more horrific. The guy who killed him was apparently a Muslim man, and he carried out the grotesque murder because he believed the teacher was showing cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad to his pupils. Horrendous. Muslim groups around France been, you know, disavowing it and all the rest of it. You tweeted out today, because immigration is a topic that you've obviously campaigned on for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you've been accused of racism and all that nonsense that goes with that, which I don't like. I'd rather people debated you on the facts. You said today, and I know you got a bit of stick for it again, that we can expect that sort of thing in the UK if we don't get a grip of immigration. Do you really believe that?
Well, certain types of immigration, yes. I mean, yes and yes and yes. I mean, it's not like Islamists are not telling us what they want to do. They are not. They're telling us loud and clear. They want to have Sharia law. They want to have. They don't like Western democracy. I mean, it's not hidden. I mean, we've already seen. You know, who was the guy who was murdered on the street? The army guy.
Lee Rigby
who was
it?
Killed.
Lee Rigby.
Yeah, Rigby. Yeah. You know, we saw a cross. I mean, the latest thing that's causing controversy today is the cross that was taken down in Clerkenwell. I think it was Clerkenwell. I'm not sure where it was. Somewhere in London, where there was a guy. Don't know where he was from. He didn't look particularly British. Was pulled down the cross from a church outside the church. Now, Nigel Farage tweeted something like, where is Welby on this, rather than complaining about Brexit. And then the vicar involved said, oh, the poor guy was mentally insane and, you know, poor, poor, poor him. And of course, you know, where is the Church of England? I mean, the Church of England is just a waste of space. I mean, I also tweeted out that, you know, that next we're saying we should get rid of churches or we should get rid of crosses on churches because they will offend in multicultural areas. I mean,
yeah,
you know, this is supposed to be We are supposed to be a Christian country, and we are supposed to be, I mean, you know, we can be tolerant to a certain extent, but if you're about to be killed, how tolerant are you going to be? We've seen what's happened in France. We've seen numerous churches, including, of course, Notre Dame and various others, cathedrals being burnt to the ground. And we saw that priest who had his throat cut on the steps. I mean, what is the step between taking, you know, this? It's only a very short ride from France to Britain, and we imported another group of people today. And now what we're doing, of course, is, I mean, the people who are going to Penethly in France, in Wales, in Pembrokeshire, were all Iranian and Iraqis. You know, first of all, you could have a riot between them because there's no love lost between Iranians and Iraqis, between Sunnis and Shias, and they're introducing them into a rural Welsh area. I mean, how can you expect assimilation there?
I agree with you. However, when I say I agree with you, there problems are inevitable. You are right. Mm-hmm. But doesn't it begin with this country's intelligence agencies and the intelligence agencies of France, the United States and Israel funding these Wahhabist jihadi head choppers in Syria mm-hmm. and Libya elsewhere anyway, Catherine? And I've interviewed Farage many times, particularly when I was back on the radio in Spain. I don't think he talked to me these days. But I used to argue with him. I used to say, listen, I understand.
Well, he doesn't like talking about Islam at all. I mean,
anymore. Yeah, but we used to argue, we used to butt heads about
yes.
it. And I would say to him, listen, I understand your concerns. I understand when people live in Leicester and Bradford and other places and they've seen their society fundamentally change. I understand it's a problem for them. Let's have a rational grown-up debate about that. But before we do that, Nigel, where is migration coming from? It's coming from hellholes that have been created by our intelligence agencies, sending money to groups like Islamic State and Boko Haram and all these other groups. And that's not conspiracy theory, Catherine. You know that's a fact.
Right, okay. I would argue that that's only a partial truth, okay? My first husband was Nepalese, and we've had massive both legal and illegal migration from yeah. Nepal. And there are 210 countries. And these hellholes that you're talking about constitute about perhaps 20 of them, but we have massive populations yeah. from countries that have had no intervention. So that's my first argument.
I agree with that point. I have a counterpoint, though. let me do a counterpoint. And we've lost Catherine. What's going on? Ah, let's see. Can we get her back? Isn't that strange? We had Catherine Blakelock on there. I think she might have been in an area of bad coverage. You heard the call drop out. We'll get her back and we'll carry on the conversation. As soon as we can, because this is very interesting, this, right? Let's get her back online. I was calling you back at the very same time.
Don't worry.
Your first point, can I just make a counterpoint to the first point?
Yes.
First of all, I agree with that. It's a very good point. However, the lunatics that you might be worried about, the sort of lunatic that might behead a French teacher, they're coming from Syria, they're coming from they're coming from Libya, they're coming from Afghanistan, they're coming from Iraq. So for me, there would be a commonality there, Catherine. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. I accept that. But there are many other arguments, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, let's deal with the issue. Well, first of all, I mean, it's very funny the way that the people who went to Penethly and have gone to Folkestone are complaining about the accommodation, that the accommodation in army barracks is perfectly acceptable for people who die for our country and army yeah. troops, yeah, but not acceptable for them. Well, you know why it's not acceptable. I'll give you the example because I know in detail how migration works in Nepal. You know, I run a health centre up in the mountains. My nurses, who are part of the middle class, have never been to the capital city. They have no ability to get to Britain. The people who are coming are not the type of refugees that you are talking about, the destitute. These are people who speak English generally or French. They are from middle class families who've got land, who are the affluent. Those yeah. are the ones who get here. It's not your poor destitute. The third point is, but if you really want to help people, then you could help them in the refugee camps in the Lebanon. And we know, for example, from Syria, that not only, and you can look at the Barnabas Trust. Trust is a Christian organization that has done this in detail, that 99% of the people who come are, they would even argue that they are the murderers. I mean, the Christians who are suffering genocide never get out of the camps. To get out of the camp, you have got to need to have money and influence, and then you've got to travel across numerous countries.
Yeah.
And to call, you are causing social disruption in both, you know, both the receiving and the country that they've gone from.
Let me back in, Catherine. Let me back in briefly, if you don't mind. Let me back in briefly, because I think you missed, not because of any lack of understanding of what I was saying, but I think you might have missed what I was trying to say. I was trying to say that if the bloke who beheads the French teacher, I mean, I can't imagine, mm-hmm. I'm not virtue signalling, both of us are disgusted by that. Those guys are getting into Europe, and those guys have direct links, those guys, with some of these terrorist groups that our intelligence agencies have been directly funding. That's the point. So when this guy turns up, it's like, I'll give you an example. You and I both know that the man blamed...
I mean, I can accept that, but, you know, who took us into the Iraq war? Well, that was Tony Blair.
Of course it was, Tony Blair, yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, I haven't got any problem. But the other thing, I mean, just taking a look at Chechnya, you know, of course that's Putin having a fight. And, you know, and there was, you know, issues, for example, you know, in Chechnya, big issues with provocation, etc. I mean, but so, you know, it, some of it is the West without any doubt. But it's not all the West by any stretch of the imagination. The Iraq-Iranian war, which was devastating, was nothing to do with the West. I mean, you could argue as well, Syria, if you looked at Syria, what was going on with Syria? Well, Qatar wanted to build a pipeline through it. I mean, there were a lot of geopolitical
factors
with Turkey and Saudi Arabia, with Lebanon, with Israel, with the United States. I mean, this just wasn't one thing that went on there.
Catherine, you're the only nationalist. You are the only, if I may describe you as a nationalist commentator. If you don't want to be categorised as such, just tell me to fake off.
Mm-hmm.
But you're the only nationalist that I've ever interviewed that is prepared to concede that it's a factor. It's important.
Of course, it's a factor.
And if we don't,
without any doubt.
And I think if we don't, because I will have people
but
listen.
It doesn't get us any further to concede it. And that's
why not?
The problem, okay? Why not?
Yeah.
Because there's no solution to the past. There's no solution to what Tony Blair did two decades ago. There is no.
I agree. Can I put a counterpoint? Can I put a counterpoint to that? Yes, I understand your point. It's a very good point. And again, I'm not patronising. I think it's a very good point. But I will have listeners in the Northwest listening to this programme from a Pakistani background, some from a Libyan mm-hmm. background. And they will say, fair enough, Catherine, you might say it serves no purpose. Blair did it. What's done is done. But it has to be acknowledged, because there are presumably hundreds and thousands, if not, but definitely not millions, but hundreds of thousands of Asian men and women living in this country who abide by the law, who live and let live, who don't want churches to be torn down, and they're in the majority. And to include them in the conversation, it mightn't be a bad thing to do what you are doing, to say, yes, some of these lunatics that get into the country from Southern Europe have been directly trained or funded by our own governments.
But it's not just the people who are coming in, and we know that as well.
I agree.
One of the things is that you know, if you look at the attitude, say, to homosexuality or to other issues, I mean, whether any type of jihad is justifiable, whether the World Trade Center was acceptable, and you look at the Pakistani villagers who came in the 1950s, who were 80, and you look at their attitudes, which were much more moderate, because they were moderate. Pakistan was not particularly at that point, nor was Afghanistan. They were not extremist places. And then you look at the next generation, and you look at the attitude, and you can go to the Pew report on it, and it's quite alarming, because attitudes of the people who are homegrown are not softening, they're hardening. So we are ending up with these enormous schisms. And the problem is that we continue, in my opinion, by importing 200 different groups. We don't just import the hatreds that they have internally in their own countries with their neighbors, etc. I mean, you just look at the trouble that was involved. Look at the trouble in Sri Lanka, where the British, you know, imported Tamil labourers. That went on for decades and decades and decades, and it's simmering and it's sort of subsided. But if you import 200 groups and then you import, and for example, Nepal itself, 30 million people, has 70 different groups itself, of which there are 70 languages and completely different religions, and some of them really don't like each other. You import all that mess as well.
Let me, that's
why we see the sort of situation where you have Hindus, Pakistanis and Indians, who there's no loss whatsoever, fighting each other on British soil. And you could end up with, in my opinion, you're going to end up with proxy-type wars. We've already seen this type of violence. We saw a minority Islam and Muslim sect where somebody actually decided to get in a car and kill him in his shop because he said Happy Christmas to his neighbours.
But I think I'm going to give you my tuppence worth, and then I'll give you the final word, which I always do, and I won't editorialise after that. Listen, I believe, and it's not because I'm some lunatic lefty, I'm not, I believe that the vast majority of men, women and children in the world who worship in mosques are looking for the same out of life as the rest of us. There is a problem. I know there's a problem with some young Pakistani men.
You're absolutely right.
Can I finish? And then I'll shut up and then you get uninterrupted. Let me finish. The vast majority. There is a problem in this country. We know that there was a huge cover-up with respect to young Pakistani men and rape gangs and you know, how they perceived young white women. Huge problems with that. I covered that. I have no problem with it. I think the vast majority. I think when you look at the radical element of it, which is dangerous, it's a huge problem. I have no problem accepting that, but I will give you my final word on it, which is this, and then you can come back and I won't interrupt you. My final word on it is that radicalism, that Wahhabism, that came from intervention historically in those countries by not only the British Empire, but the French, the Israelis, the Americans. And that's where that came from. That's my opinion. I'm going to shut up and let you have the final word. And thanks for coming back today.
Just on the Wahhabism, I do not think that the Wahhabism that we've got in this country has come from so far away. I think it's come very recently from massive funding from Saudi Arabia and Qatar. And that was created by oil wealth. And that was not related to something that happened 50, 60 years ago. That is very, very recent and absolutely millions and millions of pounds of money coming out of that. That's my first point on that. The second point, of course, you're completely right. In all societies, the majority, probably 99%, want peace and they want to have their children and go to school and work and have a nice house and that's it. The problem is, as you saw in Northern Ireland, or you see in the Tamil Tigers, and you see in all sorts of conflicts, it doesn't matter about them. It doesn't matter about them at all, because A, they don't do anything, and B, they just get dragged into conflict that's being created by a very few. And I would argue, actually, that Saudi Arabian funding of mosques and Wahhabism has been enormously influential in changing the type of Muslims and Islam that we have in this country, from those Pakistani villages into people who are much more radicalized. And that funding, I think, could have been dealt with. But again, we as a country won't say boo to Saudi Arabia, whatever it does, even if it murders people and lashes them and does whatever.
Brilliant, Catherine. Yeah, don't leave us so long before you come back. I really enjoyed speaking with you today. It's great to have the exchange
of
views.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Great to have Catherine Blakelock on the programme. Lovely to have the exchange of views there. Catherine, as I mentioned earlier on, founded the Brexit Party. She was the first leader. She's a hotelier in Norfolk. Great stuff. Thanks to her again. Right, it's exactly 3 minutes past six. You are with the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live from Salford here in the Northwest. Thanks for all the comments there. Look, I made my points about Piers. I love Piers Corbyn. I have a lot of sympathy with Piers Corbyn's views. He's on the programme regularly. He'll be on again. I put that point to Catherine. We don't jump all over our guests and scream at them. I said the same about David Icke. I made the point. A lot of things going on now that David Icke could quite fairly point to and say, well, I was writing about those things happening many moons ago. All right. I'll do my job. You do yours. Coming up for 4 minutes past the hour, here's Sting. and Fields of Gold. We're off to Cleggan on the west of Ireland to speak to Jeanne Crowley shortly. I can't wait. She's a great pal, brilliant woman. It's almost like it's like Thursday, ladies' night it is on the Richie Allen Show. Right, that is Sting, Who Else, and Fields of Gold on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Just before we say hello to Jeanne and welcome her back to the programme, you might be aware of this or you might not be aware of it, but earlier this month, around about October 1st, I think, the Texas Rangers, would you believe, served a writ or served notice. Well, they handed a case, a court case, to Netflix over the documentary Cuties, a French film, which was hugely controversial when it first came out. More controversial for some of the advertising around it and the hypersexualization of children. That's right. That was one of the claims made at the time. I haven't seen the film. I've seen clips of it. It got very good reviews when it came out. And then, as I said, there was an ad, promotional material ran by Netflix, which really wound people up. Some of the children were depicted in clothes with bare midriffs and short shorts. And anyway, the ad was pulled. Netflix said it was very sorry. But it's more to it than that, I think. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but we'll also talne about other things with my guest, Jeanne Crowley, who needs very little introduction to you. She's a great friend of mine. I must get that out there straight away in the interest of fairness and balance. A brilliant, gifted Irish actress, playwright and journalist. And it's been about 3 years since she was on the programme. Let's welcome her back. Jeanne, welcome back to Fáilte Road. How are you? You sound good. Now, first things first, are you getting us well? Because you're on the west there. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
You sound glorious. Yeah, it sounds lovely and clear. I had a laugh today when I said that you were coming on. Somebody who obviously isn't familiar with the stellar and highly successful work of Jeanne Crowley thought that I was one of those old school radio figments of imagination. Like I was using you as a prop, that you didn't really exist. But you do, and here you are. Welcome back.
Well, you know, you can think of me, you often, you know, think of me as the lazy cow, formerly known as the enthusiastic early overachiever, you know, like Prince, formerly known as.
That's right, but the story of how you decamped from Dublin and went to the west of Ireland is an amazing one, which we must, in the very near future, get into on the programme, because it is an amazing story. Cuties then, right, I remember...
Cuties was the first mistake. I mean, it's a film called Mignon, and it's not a documentary.
That's right.
It's a first feature film by a French director. She's French Senegalese, and her name is Maimouna Doucouré. Yeah. I'm not French, I'm sure.
Perfect.
Doucouré, I think. Maimouna Doucouré. And she's Senegalese French, and she was an immigrant into France, and it's her first feature film. But having seen what Netflix did with their promo, I too felt like you. And I thought, oh, what are they doing? You know, hypersexualization of children, and it's yet another sort of blow, if you like, with the what's happening with children and sexualization. But it's not. It's actually quite a good film. And yes, it's got some sexual scenes in it, but they're, basically it's the story of a young girl who's very pissed off because her mother is Muslim and her mother's husband is entitled to take another wife. So suddenly they're being thrown into a poorer position in the family. And it's they're very crowded. She's very unhappy. She's 12 or 13. She's not accepted. She wants to get into a little girl band. Now, it's not a brilliantly made film, but that's probably why it's good, because it's quite clunky and some of the performances are a bit amateur. But it's actually a good film, and it's a film about a mother and daughter, really. Awkward young teens, and there's a bit of crude vulgarity. But it was a film called Mignon, and she made it because she'd realized how much the sexualization of children was happening in France. Well, it's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, these girls that are featured in those shots that Netflix used as their promo, they didn't grow up listening to I Want to Hold Your Hand, you know?
Yeah.
They grew up watching Miley Cyrus wearing a dildo on stage, twerking.
That's right.
So that's their visual images. Their visual images is that sexualization that they've been watching on video and on their screens for all of their childhoods.
How many of the people who've been hypercritical of the film have actually seen it then. This guy, Brian Babin, who's a Republican, I think he's a Republican member of Congress. I stand to be corrected now. But he tweeted out very recently that QTs clearly meets the US legal definition of child pornography. It's disturbing to see a mainstream media company promoting the sexualization of children. It's obvious then, listen to what you've just told us, he hasn't seen it. He's just seen the promotional material.
No, you couldn't say that if you've seen it. You couldn't. But there were a few unfortunate things. I mean, Netflix promo was ridiculous. And the one scene where you could say it was sort of paedophile friendly is very short. And it's in context. And you have to allow an artist to perform a or to play out a work when it's in context. And I don't see the children didn't seem remotely abused. And it was mostly about a rather, you know, nasty girl gang that gang up on each other. But the unfortunate thing was that, and also the director, Miss Ducouré, she won an award at the Sundance Film Festival last year. But the unfortunate thing was that the co-founder of the Sundance Festival, a man called Sterling Van Wagenen, happened to be found guilty of child sex abuse in 2019 and was sentenced to 6 years. And this is the quote, 6 years to life in prison.
6 years to life.
So that wasn't a good, you know,
coincidence. It didn't do it any favours.
I mean, if you think of it, she's a French filmmaker. She gets her first feature film shown at Sundance. She wins an award. And it's a difficult line to tread. I'm sure she'd defend herself very well. You know, how do I show what these girls were doing without titillating?
Without showing it.
And I think she managed it pretty well.
I'm going to watch it now based on that. The director is Maimouna Ducouré, as you said. Did this avalanche of outpouring of emotion, has that come because never more than now, I mean, I'm only guessing this, our senses are heightened now more than ever to child exploitation. Is that why there was such an outcry against it?
Oh, definitely. Because so much of the mainstream pop media for children is so sexualized now. I mean, go back to Miley Cyrus. She started off as one of those Disney girls, you know, innocent and beautiful, and every teen loved her. And then suddenly she transforms herself into this creature who's, you know, acting out sexually on stage. And they want to copy her because she's their heroine.
Yeah.
I mean, is there something behind this? And all those stories that Corey Feldman and those talked about, the Disney teens and all those young Disney groups who were working together. And, you know, pedophilia, I think, is the big elephant in the room.
And I would include
that with the Maxwell business, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell and Epstein. You know, I think that's just the tip of the iceberg, you know, young women in their late teens and early 20s. I think it's an awful lot worse than that. And it involves much younger children.
You've kind of semi, at any time you want, of course, you can smack me in the face metaphorically, but you've kind of, not semi-retired, I mean, the Constance Markovich, Mary Kenny Association, that was brilliantly reviewed and looked absolutely fantastic. And hopefully you'll be treading the boards again soon. You're that gifted. But for the moment, let's just say you're up to your eyes on the west of Ireland. But you've done everything, Jeanann. In acting and in producing, did you ever hear any whispers when you were active, when you were properly active, about children being in danger or being in a place of, yeah, I suppose danger if they were around film sets or TV studios? Did you ever hear anything?
Never.
Yeah. Everybody I've asked has said the same thing. I know a few actors and actresses and I've asked them, they said, no, we never heard tell
of
anything.
Work in the theatre and we work in film and television and we work in Britain and Ireland. You know, we're not in Hollywood.
Not in Hollywood.
I think Hollywood is where it all began.
The centre of it.
The exploitation of youth and beauty.
And do you find it credible now? I mean, when you read about, I mean, I had Isaac Cappy on the show infamously 3 or 4 years ago, and God love him, not long after that, he allegedly took his own life. A lot of people don't believe he took his own life. Do you find it credible that a massive pedophile network may have been or is operating even today in and around Hollywood. Is that something that you find credible? A lot of people say to me, ah, Richie, come on, in this day and age, with all the devices, the phones, the cameras, how could they keep it secret? What do you think?
I think there is, yeah. I think pedophilia is part of the whole Luciferian way of being, but I know very little about it, except I'm completely feel that it's true.
Yeah.
But to go back to the sexualization of the young, that led me on. When I was when I'd watched that again, I went back and I had a look at the very good interview that Edward Griffin did. You know G. Edward Griffin, whom we both adore?
Yeah, great guy.
We still have on the show. He did that famous interview that's now got a bit of a re-release thanks to some movie, I think, called Call of Duty or some series.
Yeah.
Anyway, the interview he did with Yuri Bezmenov, do you remember that?
I do. Brilliant interview.
He was the KGB defector. And he talked about ideological subversion, the slow process to change the perception of reality to such an extent that you demoralize people. You totally demoralize them. And one of the things about child sexualization is that it demoralizes the children because they associate sex with performance and nudity and not with affection and love and commitment. And when you're in your teens, it's very easy not to understand the difference. And when you're younger, there's no possibility at all. So he describes very vividly that this process of demoralization, and I would include in that how the education system has gone and the increase of the sexual education within the system, which is happening now, and the whole gender bender and the Desmond is... What's that? Desmond is amazing, and all the drag queens in the libraries. All of it's to do with demoralization. And then when you demoralize a population, you can destabilize them. And I think that's what we're going through now.
Demoralization.
He was so offhand about it. He said, it's happening in America. You don't protect your families. You don't protect your values. You don't protect your Christian... He said your Christian values, actually.
Is it a case that people are unaware of what's happening? Living in Salford, which is obviously a very working class area, and reminds me very much of where I grew up in Ballybeg in Waterford, so it is very working class, and we would regularly see young girls, very young girls, and they would be dressed in the provocative, I shouldn't say provocative, because the children are not trying to provoke anything. They're not, but the clothes, you could argue, are very provocative. Now, presumably, those parents are decent parents, or they're parents who are trying to do their best. But they don't seem to be aware of it. But we are. We're very aware of it, to the point where it's kind of uncomfortable when you see youngsters coming up. We're surrounded by young children where we live.
Mm.
And some of the girls, Jean-Anne, yeah, it's the very, very short shorts and the kind of halter top. And they're children. Like, they're 9, 10, 11. And you think to yourself, well, if we ever had kids, there's no way. You know, you say that, there's no way. And yet, the parents can't be the worst people in the world. I don't know what's going on. Why are they not aware of, I don't know, the exposure of it or the danger of it? I just can't understand that. Do you?
Difficult. Both parents are working. Go back to the demoralisation and of a society. Did you come across Aaron Russo in your travels?
I did indeed. Of course, the late, great Aaron Russo.
Well, Aaron Russo, I mean, that was an eye-opener for me. Aaron Russo, when he described feminism, and he said that they funded this, you know, that the Rockefellers funded feminism. And it was a CIA operation, and I thought that was a bit over the top.
Yeah.
Because I knew M Magazine, and I'd met a few of the feminists in New York. But it turns out it was true. They did finance the feminist movement. And his cynical reply to Aaron Russo, who was amazed, was that, you know, you can tax half the population, but you can tax the other half if you get them out to work.
Right.
You also help destroy the family because the kids have got to go into kindergarten and they're not going to bond the way families used to. And now we're going to have two salaries to keep a family going, and now we're going to have to pay for the childcare, and now the parents don't have any time to be at home looking at what their children are wearing or what they're getting up to on their laptops. I mean, it makes sense when you think about it from that point of view.
It does. Let alone have any time to play with them or to read stories to them or to talk to them about their grandparents or their great-grandparents.
Or just to sit around and be bored, like, you know, little families used to be. Sharing meals, all of the things that we took for granted, that I took for granted. I had a very privileged upbringing in that sense. You know, I lived lived near the sea, went to a local school, got the bus, came home, my mother fed us, father went to work, you know, and you went out to play and you didn't come home until your tea was ready.
Yeah, that's right. You were screamed in.
Nobody
screamed
asked where
in.
You were.
That's right.
Where did you go? Out. Yeah. What did you do? Nothing.
That's right. You're out for 12 hours. I didn't do anything. Jean-Anne Crowley is our guest. This is really interesting stuff. Feminists might say, ah, come on, Jean-Anne. There were some women who were fed up of being confined to the domicile. There were women who were fed up of being a homemaker and, you know, subservient to a guy. So I'm guessing what you're saying is that organisations like the Rockefeller Foundation, they saw that and took advantage of it. It's not that they created it as such, it's that they saw an opportunity in it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and of course there were lots of women that domesticity did not suit, my mother being one, who was forever furious that when she got married, she had by law to give up her job. And she was, you know, I grew up all my childhood, you know, being drummed into me how appalling that was, you know, you have to give up your job and you get married, you have to have your own financial independence. I mean, that's different. But lots of people want to be, well, lots of women want to be mothers and want to bring up a family. And I didn't have a family, but I wanted a career. And I knew, I think I saved a lot of children a lot of pain by not getting married. And I don't resent the fact that I didn't have a family because I knew I couldn't manage both. Lots of people can, and more power to them. I'm amazed. My brother had 7 children, and they're a credit to him. But no, the choice wasn't there. Suddenly they have to go, and then the cost of living goes up, and then they're at work, and then they can't get out of it. I just think it's become too difficult to live the sort of life that we took for granted for anyone now. It's all become a different way of life, but they want that different way of life. And that's why I'm coming around to this thing I wanted to talk to you about. The beginner's guide to the new world order. Did I mention that?
You did mention it. This is before you go down that road, I want to ask you this. This is fascinating. We're going to talk about the beginner's guide to the new world order. I'm glad
this is an idea I wanted to throw open to your audience.
And I'm glad we're talking about it because we've been talking about it for about 3 years now. So if it comes to fruition, it'll be brilliant. Jean-Anne Crowley is really real. For those of you who thought that, I used to know a guy called Barry. He was a radio presenter in Spain. And he'd worked for every BBC station, a genius of a presenter. And he used to present a music show in the afternoon. And he had a character called Natasha, who wasn't real. And he would talk to Natasha on air. It's not new. Presenters used to do this. So one or two people assumed that when I mentioned Jean-Anne, that Jean-Anne was a Natasha of sorts. Now, Jean-Anne, it's lucky that Jean-Anne's got a modicum of humility in her. Because Jean-Anne Crowley is one of the most successful Irish women of all time. A genius, written for every national newspaper.
Stop it.
A brilliant actress. National theatre, films, great films.
Your last performance.
And your last performance is brilliant, so we can say that. So Jean-Anne is real, by the way. Mark Bajerski sends his love. He insisted that I say hello to you tonight. Lots of interest in this. Before you go down the road of the beginner's guide to the new world order, which will be brilliant, what do you make then of what's happening in schools? And we don't have to get into this in any big way. Just give me a quick comment. We know that children are being asked to entertain ideas in school that I was never asked to entertain, that you were never asked to entertain, at least not until we were in our mid to late teens, if even. Is one of the consequences then of this change in the family dynamic and the not so much the inability but the lack of time for parents to understand what's going on in their children's lives. Is that why now this education programme is being rolled in that is fairly scary? And neither you nor I are prone to sensationalism. But what they're asking children to think about at age 7, 8 and 9, I find it disgraceful and very scary. What do you think before we move on?
I find it disgraceful and very scary. And there is an agenda. I hate the word agenda, but there are so many. There is an agenda. If you separate sex from love, from affection, from commitment, and you treat it as a bodily function entirely, and those charts they were giving the children, I think you did something about it a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And the chart was in the form of a cross, and it had masturbation and various other things, and it was for 7 or 8 year olds.
Yeah.
That's wrong. But anyone with an instinct, anyone with a grain of sensitivity towards children's upbringing knows that there's something very wrong about that.
Yeah.
That's not a time for them to be involved in that. They're not interested, for one thing.
Not remotely. When we were seven,
and it should be the parents, not the schools anyway. But then again, so many separated parents, so many one-parent families. It's the structure of the family that we sort of took for granted. You know, the family is the basic unit of society. Pierce talked about that in the last essay he wrote before he was taken out and shot. 6 weeks before he was taken out and shot, he wrote about the family being the basis and the nation being the family in large. And he actually talked about corporations being evil in large. And he used the word corporation in 1916. We're dealing with a new world order, whether people like it or not. And they're calling it all sorts of different things. What was the new... the Great Reset?
The Great Reset, yeah. The Fourth Industrial Revolution.
Yes, that's the other one, the Fourth Industrial. But there is a book called The Great Reset.
Yeah. World Economic Forum pushing this really heavily.
Written by a man called Klaus Schwab, who set up the World Economic Forum. Yeah. And he's like, he looks like a James Bond villain when he gives a speech. I mean, if you watch any of his speeches on YouTube, you begin to think, you know, who could play him? I mean, he's a perfect Bond villain.
It looks like a parody. The speeches look like a parody. It's hard to believe somebody is saying...
But he's a dangerous...
Dangerous
doctor.
Man, yeah, he is, yeah. Yeah. Now, on that...
He said, build back better.
Build back better. First
destroy. And we're going to use this wonderful opportunity of the COVID-19 to change everything about the way we live, including intimacy, including connection, including shutting every theatre. You can't have social distancing in theatre. Social distancing in concerts just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And what is theatre for? The Greeks built their theatres next to their hospitals because they considered the theatre to be the hospital of the spirit. But these are materialists. Transhumanism is their ambition. They have no interest in the soul or the spirit because they don't believe in God or the divine or the great, something bigger than us.
I didn't know.
It's all Luciferian.
I didn't know about the Greeks and the hospitals until you told me. It's great. Knowledge is a great thing. It's great to be speaking to people that can educate you. I didn't realise that. It's a wonderful thing.
It meant a lot to me when I was in theatre because I understood how theatre works when you're doing it. But they know that. They know it. They've done all the psychology. You can't work. Theatre will never work if people aren't close together because it's energy. It goes back to Tesla. Frequency, energy, vibration, and any actor will tell you, any musician, it's quicker for a musician, and actors don't like musicians because you can hit an audience, you can engage them much faster with music than you can with words. But when you do it with words in the middle of the second act, you know you have them.
Yeah.
It's an exchange of energy. And that's why people say you have to be there. You know, you have to see it live.
How hard is it for
and
you
that's
now?
That's what you cannot do with what they're doing to us now.
Yeah.
That'll never happen again.
Are you that pessimistic about it? I mean, when this all began...
Well, that just came out. I didn't mean to say that.
No, fair enough. Listen, when this began...
I hate to think it won't happen again, but...
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a shock when you realise that there's evil afoot. And it's very hard for people. That's why the beginner's guide. It's very hard for people in the middle of the road who get something or who, because of these ridiculous lunatic restrictions that change, you know, believe six impossible things before breakfast, said the Red Queen.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
they change
yeah.
by the day and you're locked in and you're locked out and you can have three people or four people and one has to have red hair, whatever it is. Some people who'd never have questioned before are beginning to say there's something fishy. And they're the kind of people that we need to reach.
The perplexed, I think you referred to them at one stage over the years.
Yeah.
Privately to me. The perplexed. Jean-Anne Crowley is our guest. Playwright, journalist, actress extraordinaire. Live on the line from Cleggan. Extraordinaire. Now listen, tell me, because you've always had, you're very honest about your own background and your privileged upbringing. Brilliant at uni, went on to do all the things that you did, and you know a lot of people, and you're very well known. And you had a moment, I suppose, and this is where we get on to talk about the Beginner's Guide to the New World Order. You must have had a moment or two down the years where you found yourself in the middle of the road, sinking, something isn't right here. How did you navigate that? I know the very first, because this is the third time we've spoken. We haven't spoken for 3 years on the show. We speak at least a couple of times a week. You're a great friend, as I said before. So 3 years since you were on, the very first time you came on, you touched on this, your own acceptance. Is it hard to accept that something is going on? Is it hard to accept it, number one, first and foremost?
Very. When it dawns on you, when you finally realise, let's say 9/11 as an example, but of course being that bit older, you know, there were questions about Kennedy and the moon landings and everything, and I often thought there was something wrong, but I'm too busy with my own life to think about it. Obviously, when you're young, you are. 9/11, after 9/11, building number 7, when you realise the enormity of what was pulled off and how well it was done, that really got me thinking. Well, it had to. Then you start to follow the money. And then you discover G. Edward Griffin's great book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Then you read that, and then you go somewhere else. And then you discover the CIA and what they were talking about when they invented the thing, the term conspiracy theorist. And through them you find John Perkins. And then you read Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And suddenly you're beginning to understand it.
Yeah.
And you're beginning to realize there's an awful lot more to this than I first thought. And it's bigger than I could possibly have imagined. So, yes, and then you get terribly upset. And then you go, where's the cavalry?
Where's the cavalry?
And then you go, well, there's a war against humanity, and maybe there's something in the book of Revelation.
Yeah, and you share these thoughts
and maybe
with...
there's something in the book of Ephesians, for our war is not against flesh and blood. We war against spiritual wickedness in high places. I don't know. And then, I am one of the perplexed.
And then you have these conversations. They become inevitable, conversations with friends, because you understand. I understood when I read a certain book that I've mentioned a million times, that what happened on September the 11th was a travesty, that it was basically anything but that which we were told. And I broadcast live on the day, as I've said a few times over the years. So I had to look into all that. And then I did, and I did it properly, and then I realised that it was nonsense, the official story. So then you have conversations with people, the people who love you, and most of the time, for everybody, and I would say it's 90% of the time, that's maybe a guess, they're not too thrilled to be having these conversations. And that's difficult in and of itself, isn't it? It's difficult when the people that you love and who love you dismiss it or think that you're having a moment. It's not easy.
No. No, I had a famous moment with a friend, and when I went into my theory about 9/11, among good friends whom I'd known a long time, one of them said, that's Gene Ann for you. Not only lost the plot, but the popcorn, the soundtrack, and the bleeding cinema.
Yeah, that's right.
And everybody laughed, and I laughed too.
I would have laughed as well. Even though I agree with you, I would have laughed. It's a great line, but you have to deal with that. You have to deal with that. It might only be a smidgen of ridicule, but it's not what you need. When you start to think or realise that things are not right, last thing you need is for people to think it's hilarious. It isn't hilarious. It's far from it. And the whole thing about...
Well, look what Ike put up with for so many years.
Yeah, for years, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's an extraordinary man.
Yeah.
From that point of view. Imagine putting up with that for so long.
Yeah, and the family, of course, as well, on top of it.
Yeah.
And somebody said to you, if I'm talking out of turn now, slap me down fairly quickly. But somebody said to you a couple of years ago about, 3 years ago or 4 years ago, you said to me, the beginner's guide to the new world order. And I understood that to mean something to read, something that you could present to people that were worried, fed up, thinking there's something not right. And perfect time. No, because before you, again, I keep saying this all, I said it all day long, I said it in the first interview as well today, my first guest. Before we get to that, this whole thing, this must be the ultimate catalyst. If this doesn't get people scratching their heads, nothing will, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They've just announced a 5-level lockdown in Ireland for the next 6 weeks.
Five tiers. Five tiers. Oh,
in England, no, you have tiers and we have levels. Don't ask me why.
So they're going to level. See, now you've broken some news on the Richie Allen radio show. In Ireland, they're going to five. They're going to level five, are they? Full lockdown.
Yes.
Jesus wept. Sorry for the blasphemy. I know you're telling the truth, but I'm going into RTE.ie as we're live
check.
Anyway.
I could have misheard.
I doubt you did. Jeanne Crowley's our guest. Great, great friend of mine. It's not a word I use lightly. Great friend of mine. Great supporter of the independent media. And level 5 restrictions for 6 weeks being considered, which probably means they'll be introduced. So, yeah. I'm on RTE's homepage, Jeanne. It looks like they're talking about them.
They're making an announcement at 9 o'clock tonight, yeah. But I just heard they were going to announce it.
You're spot on. They're meeting tonight to finalise a plan to move the country to level 5, which in Ireland means full lockdown until the end of November and catastrophic economic damage and all the rest of it. So again, we're back to the beginner's guide to the New World Order. If people are not now scratching their heads, we might as well give up, pack our bags and say to hell with it.
What would you direct them to?
Yeah, I don't
know. I mean, you can start with Huxley and the Orwell. The idea is to produce a sort of a pamphlet, maybe 30 pages, like in the tradition of those political pamphlets, you know, readable, something you can carry.
Yeah.
But it would have, it would be a beginner's guide to the New World Order. And I'd like some other people's experiences, you know, how they found out, what books or what sources they'd recommend. I mean, there are really good people in the independent media, like Catherine Austin Fitz, for instance, the Solari Report.
Great.
She's a terrific woman. And poor Dane Wigington, who's been banging on about climate, about chemtrails for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a bit of a saint. And Robert, speaking of saints, RFK Jr.
RFK.
And his wonderful work in the Children's Defence on vaccine and vaccine injury. And I don't know why my friends and contemporaries and people I would call perplexed, like I was, aren't more interested. And maybe if there was a simple little volume they could take around, you know, like a guide to British birds or Irish wildflowers, and they could put it in their pockets, and it could be their little guide to the New World Order.
Isn't it because we're back to the press. Where in Ireland would a man or a woman come across a quote from RFK? They're not likely to. Now, I don't see the Late Late Show these days. I know that Ryan Tuberty, God love him, I know he interviewed Fauci, Dr. Fauci, if you please, but I don't think he's ever had RFK on, has he? Maybe he has.
Of course not.
No, he hasn't. And that's why Irish people won't have heard of the fact that Kennedy's nephew, RFK's son, is taking up the baton on behalf of children's health. They don't know because it's not broadcast. This is the sickener. So, folks, Jeanne is talking about. I don't know how far you want to take this. If you want me to direct people to your Facebook page, I mean, your Facebook page is there anyway. There's only one Jeanne Crowley, full stop. But there's
If they've got something that I could use or that they think might be useful, my email would be fine.
You're happy giving out your email address?
I'm happy to give out my email to your listeners, Richie. Of course.
The one that I have.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you're happy to do that, because it sounds now, I mean, first of all, again, I'm not kissing her arse. I'm not. She's a magnificent writer, is Jeanne Crowley. So you're prepared.
You are kissing my arse.
I'm not. No, it's a fact. It's a fact. So it is. You wrote an article for the website a couple of years ago. It was fantastic. So you're kind of nearly half committed to doing this now.
Yeah. If I got some more directions to go, some people found out through science fiction. They did, and some people found out through studying the OTO and things. Whatever got them into it, whatever thread of the New World Order or the great big web that they're spinning around us, whatever got them into it. A lot of people, it was 9/11, I know.
Yeah, I think so. This
but what
century.
Led them, where do they go after 9/11?
Yeah.
If that was their wake-up call, do they go backwards into history or do they start looking at the contemporary, whatever. There might be one or two people I could follow.
It wasn't even. It's funny you mentioned September the 11th. For me, that didn't even do the trick, really. It was when July 7th bombings happened in 2005. We were living in Manchester. We were just about to leave the country to go and live in Spain. But that was it for me then. You know, if 9/11 had kind of opened the door a bit, the 7th of July had kicked it down. Never was there. I mean, you know, famously, infamously, there was a guy who went on national television on the night to say that he was running a drill that imagined exactly the same attacks at exactly the same stations. A guy called Peter Power. I mean, I laughed out loud when I saw that ITN report. I couldn't believe it. You know, and that was it for me. And there was never any looking back then. So I love the idea of the beginner's guide.
And then discovering that the other thing that was very hard for me, Richie, was discovering how implicit the media were.
Yeah.
Because I used to love writing for the Irish Times, yeah. And I was proud to write for them. And I loved the work I did for Channel 4 and RTE. But honestly, you know, the way the media had gone, and you can trace it back by 1991, and I have the quote here because I keep it close to me. David Rockefeller, in 1991, as early as that, he said, "We're grateful," and I quote, "to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications, whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promise of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we'd been subject to the bright lights of publicity during these years. But the work is now much more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government."
Yeah.
Unquote. That was his address to the Trilateral Commission in 1991.
You could present that quote now to one of your learned friends who loves you and will always love you, but thinks that you've become a bit eccentric. And you've got that quote and you could put it in front of them, and I don't think it would make any difference. And that's a killer for me. Do you know that? That really drives me up the wall. Yeah.
I know it's a killer for you. It's a killer for me too.
Yeah.
And what about the young ones?
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, as Paul Simon, you know, had terribly...
Right, we might have just lost Jean-Ann momentarily. Are you still there? Tell you what I'll do now. What I always do in these situations, I'll disconnect and reconnect again. Jean-Ann Crowley, I know many or most of you will know who she is. If you don't, Jean-Ann is a highly accomplished Irish actress, playwright and journalist. As she said, she mentioned the Irish Times there. She's written for all the Irish broadsheets for many years. Star of stage and screen. You're back in the room. We lost you momentarily. I was a bit worried there.
I know you did. The phone went.
The phone went because you mentioned something on Facebook about losing electricity on the west of Ireland. Have you gone back to the 17th century there in Cleggan? You lost electricity yesterday, apparently.
It's a very salutary reminder when the electric goes out how dependent we are on the grid, Richie.
Indeed. Now,
and I have the oddest feeling that the American grid might just go down in the next month or so.
You expect...
I don't know why I think that.
You expect... Well, it's not that you expect. You wouldn't be surprised if all sorts of shenanigans began to happen around the US election.
No. Not remotely. They're happening already.
Yeah.
The CNN crowd aren't reporting the whole Biden-son business.
Yeah.
And the other side are screaming, why not? I don't know. It's like, well, you've often pointed out a puppet show. It's distraction.
Imagine.
But as their food chain isn't great, and as there are 30 million unemployed or something, and as these COVID payments are going to run out, what's going to happen next?
If there was some obstruction to the election, or if following the election there's some confusion around the result, that will set the scene for absolute chaos there, won't it? Can you imagine? It'll kick off major, big time.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. You were talking before we got cut off, it was very important actually, you were talking about, you quoted David Rockefeller. I think it's one of the all-time important quotes. It's real, it was said, he meant it, we know the implications of it. And yet if you, as a congenial... You, as a convivial, you, as a very lucid person, would present that to somebody, the likelihood of them looking at it and saying, Jesus, did he really say that? I'll have to get into that, because that might make me think a bit differently about how news is disseminated. But they generally don't. They generally tend to be dismissive of it. This is the human condition now. It doesn't compute, it doesn't align with my worldview, so I'm going to ignore it. I can't live with that for much longer, Ms. Crowley. I can't put up with that for much longer. You know, it's not a case of telling people the Queen is a lizard. It's not. It's a case of saying, look, this is what this guy said. Look at the Rockefeller Foundation think tank. They planned scenarios like COVID-19 and how countries would be locked down.
Back in 2017,
yeah.
Mr. Fauci, who's adored over here, he got such a snow job when he was on Ryan Wolfel Tuberty. He spoke at Georgetown University in 2017 and said he had no doubt but that Trump would be confronted, and I quote, with a surprise infectious pandemic during his presidency.
Yeah.
Well, oh my God, was he talking to Mystic Meg or
Mystic
something?
Mystic Meg, yeah.
Remember Mystic Meg?
I do.
Well, how does he know?
How does he know, yeah.
And how did they so cleverly rehearse when they had that meeting in New York with the World Economic Forum, that strange man who looks like something from 007, and Bill and Melinda, that wonderful couple who are doing so much for humanity. And they had it in New York in November, and suddenly it happened in Wuhan just as they anticipated it might.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to wake up, but I don't understand. But this is where you end up banging your head against the wall or screaming.
And you imagine.
I only lost it once, Richard.
You only lost it one time.
I only lost it once at the weekend. I was in Clifton, and I went into a shop, and it was a huge shop, and I'd been fine, and I hadn't worn a mask anywhere. And it is a big shop, an outlet shop. I thought I might get a little jacket for the winter. And the girl from behind a mask says, "Where's your mask?" And I said, "I don't wear one." She said, "You can't come in here without a mask." And I'm afraid I said, "This is crazy. This is fucking crazy."
You'd had enough.
Yeah.
You'd had enough. What was the reaction to "this is fucking crazy"? What was the response?
Well, I don't think she recognised me, so that was good.
Yeah, the compliance, again, we could have spent time on that. The compliance is maddening. I don't understand it. We've got Jeanne Crowley on the line. It's 12 minutes to the top of the year. We're going for another 7 or 8 minutes. I want to go back to the beginner's guide to the New World Order. I think it's a magnificent idea that somebody like yourself would write it.
It's an embryonic idea.
An embryonic idea. And if I was to give out your email address, you would be asking people to share their own experiences with you, number one, but also to suggest directions that you could, I suppose, go down, or suggest avenues for you to pursue in the book. I'll give out. Are you sure you want me to give out the email address now?
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure.
Some of these lunatics that listen to me, I'm telling you, hang on a second. So you can always, you can always. Right, so Jean Anne's email address is very simple.
But it might have been something spiritual that woke someone up.
Yeah.
It could be anything. It could be the death of a parent that woke them up. It mightn't be something as big as 9/11. But somehow they woke up. Somehow they found the Richie Allen Show. Somehow they're as completely perplexed and bamboozled as I was. And we're looking for something that, so you can talk to normal people, to the noise. Not the ones who know what's going on.
Well, people who don't, and people who are suffering under this nonsense.
Yeah, but they won't be too distressed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you having those Fred men on the other night.
Right, said Fred, Richard and Fred, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because they're kind of, they don't agree on everything, and they're entertainers, really. But it was very refreshing, because normal people who might find someone off the wall when they, you know, get into the more esoteric elements, couldn't but be reassured by that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, that's what I'm trying to say. And an old-fashioned little manual. Put it like it's like a manual. It's not a book, but it's the old-fashioned pamphleteer manual. Something that you could just look at if you wanted to, but wouldn't be, you know, might be good. We'll find a way of doing it, and whether how to.
Well, listen. I like the fact.
I
like embryonic ideas. I like the old. The old adage about the pond, chucking a stone into a pond. If you want to drop Jean Anne an email, her email address is Crowley, so that's C-R-O-W-L-E-Y, you should know that, CrowleyJeanAnne@gmail.com, CrowleyJeanAnne@gmail.com, and Jean Anne is obviously spelled J-E-A-N-A-N-N-E. So Jean, J-E-A-N, and then Crowley, Gnanne. I'll tweet out a link to it now. CrowleyGnanne@gmail.com. I think it's a fantastic idea, and I know.
I mean, we've all come to understand what we understand now via varying routes, is what I really mean.
Yeah, you're right. Different avenues. Yeah.
Some came through science fiction, Hollywood, the music industry. Do you remember Dave McGowan's great book, Weird Scenes Inside Laurel Canyon?
Which I never read, sadly.
Excellent book,
yeah,
Richie.
Yeah, I never read that book, yeah.
And some people might have started studying propaganda and come across Edward Bernays. And then some people might have found it through Stephen King and those strangely predictive science fiction novels.
You're right.
Anyway, it could be interesting, that's all.
Oh, I think it'd be very interesting. And I know one or two people have expressed some interest in it, so you never know where it might go. It might not go anywhere, but you never know where it might go. I think it's a fantastic idea. No, I really do.
And given that I live alone on beside the ocean and I can't go anywhere for in lockdown, I'll have plenty of time on my hands to do it.
Plenty of time, yeah. Clegg, the mask story...
If only I had your work ethic, Richie. I had it when I was your age, though.
These days, nobody has my work ethic for two reasons. For one important reason, nobody is stupid enough to do what it is that I do. I reckon, folks, drop Gnanne an email. Listen back to today's conversation on the podcast or on iTunes or on Spotify, and get a gist of what she's talking about. There are millions of people who maybe previously would have been very quick to dismiss out of hand your own experience. Now, they're not as quick to dismiss out of hand your own experience. And I know this to be true because I do spend a lot of time walking around Salford and I do bump into people and they do tell me. In fact, I met a gentleman called Alan the other morning and Alan said, I just recently heard your programme. I said, did you? Thanks for listening. He said, a mate of mine put it on to me. Never had any interest in any of that sort of thing before, says Alan. But I can't get my head around what's happening. My job is at stake. Livelihood is at stake. I'm all over the place. I was interested to hear the doctor, Dr. Coleman. I heard another guy and I thought, lovely, good. But he admitted it. He said, there's no way I would have listened to any of that sort of stuff before. So you're right. People are ripe now to be gently, I don't want to say led by the hand, not at all, but to be gently nudged. Look, there is something that's going on. Maybe have
just
a look at this.
Nudge their curiosity and then it's up to them.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, as Dorothy Parker, and you can take a horticulture, but you can't make her think.
No, that's right.
In the immortal words of.
Yeah. I think it's great. CrowleyGnanne@gmail.com. I'd be... I'll tell you what. What I was going to say, I won't say. I'll tell you off air. Right.
That sounds very professional.
I know. It's not so professional. I don't want to get into it, but something else has occurred to me. But without speaking to somebody, I couldn't say it without, first of all, speaking to somebody. But I think it's a terrific idea. Before you go, give me some optimism. Surely where you are, where a number of your neighbours would be in their 60s, they'd be in their 70s. They must...
Yes, and older.
And older. They must be getting this, Gina. They're not all wearing the masks, are they?
I'm afraid a lot of them are. The older... Some of the men around here who worked in London... You know, when I was in London, as one of them would say to me sometimes, you were in the National Theatre, I was believe the Piccadilly Line, Gina. But they, and a lot of them would have left school very early, gone off on the boat. They're much more clued in. They know there's more going on. But my contemporaries and friends are all very COVID conscious and very mask wearing and very irritating altogether.
Very irritating. And yet you have to live with them and amongst them,
well,
as I do here. There's no escaping them. And ultimately, forgive them for they know not what they do. They don't know any better. That's the thing.
And can I leave you with a poem?
Leave me with a poem, by all means, Gnanne. Be a lovely way to finish.
I'm mad about the romantics. And, you know, I like the esoteric and I like to think that it's not just a daily grind. And that things pass. One of my favourite poems, I found it today and I thought, this is good.
I met a traveller from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them, on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things. The hand that mocks them, and the heart that fed. And on the pedestal, these words appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. This too shall pass, Richie.
Fantastic, Jeanne. Listen, thanks for coming back today. I can't believe it's 3 years since you were on. But I'm sure you'll be back sooner than that. Thanks for that. I've put the email address on Twitter, so expect an avalanche of emails. An avalanche. I can hear myself in the background now. Listen, thanks. Lots of love. Thanks for doing that today. I really appreciate that. Folks, email CrowleyGeanAnn@gmail.com. And Jeanne, thanks again. We'll talk again real soon. The amazing Jeanne Crowley, Irish actress, playwright and journalist on the Richie Allen Radio Show for Monday, October 19th, 2020. That's a brilliant idea, that. A beginner's guide to the new world order. I've put the email address out there. Drop her an email and be nice. That's it for the programme. Thanks to Catherine Blakelock for coming on in the first hour. We'll talk again tomorrow, Tuesday, at 5 o'clock UK time, usual channels. Going out today with this from Duran Duran. Speak tomorrow then. Bye from me. Bye now.